before we rejoin the party? I never thought I would see the day that Mrs. King would invite me for a drink. I didn't even know what the glass she was offering would be full of, but at that point I would have gulped down a cup of molasses just for the sense of inclusion. Sure. I tried to keep my smile chill, not too excited. Mature girls keep their cool. All the time. I followed her into a small butler's pantry. While we walked, I pulled my hair out from behind my ears and tugged down the hem of my dress. After she pulled down a black bottle with a diamond-shaped sticker on the front, she turned to me. She pointed above my head. "Grab two glasses." When I looked up, there were racks of glasses and goblets, everything from champagne flutes to beer mugs. I grabbed two cups that I thought looked good for whatever it was that she was going to have me drink. When I handed them to her, she turned her wrist around and her watch sparkled under the light. Everything about her dripped elegance and class. She gave me an approving smile, and my heart leaped. She then opened a small fridge built into the wall. She bent down, and I heard ice clinking into the glasses. I read the label on the black bottle, Hendrick's Gin. I had had gin only once until that night with my ex-best friend from Texas, Justina. That was an awful night, the beginning of the end of our friendship. "Here we are." She slid my glass to me and set hers down. Her slender fingers wrapped around the glass bottleneck and she yanked the top off. Her creme brulee nails looked so posh and beautiful against her dark skin as she poured the clear gin over the ice cubes. When she finished, I waited a moment, hoping that she would pull out a mixer of some sort. She didn't. She just took a drink of it straight and said, "I don't drink often, but when I do, it's the real deal." I smiled and followed her lead, raising my glass to hers. I took a small sip, and my tongue burned, but truly, it wasn't so bad. It was a hell of a lot better than cheap beer or the wine coolers my friends in Texas always stole from their mom's stashes. To that day, I couldn't stand the smell of wine coolers. They reminded me of those fake bitches who ruined my life in Texas. Mrs. King put her glass down on the counter in front of us. "So, Meg, are you seeing anyone?" I couldn't help but wonder how her lipstick wasn't smudged even a bit. I nodded and hoped that I wouldn't choke when I went to speak. "Yes, Mrs. King. I'm dating a man named John Brooke. He's graduating from West Point next week." I wanted her to be impressed.
"I know him, I believe. Good for you. He'll take care of you. That's all we can hope for."
The way she said those words grated on me a little, but if she weren't anything close to right, why did I mention John's West Point graduation?
"Yeah," was all I said.
"Let me tell you something, Meg." It wasn't a request. She was going to speak regardless of my response. I nodded anyway. I took another sip of gin, and it burned just a touch less than the first. "My son thinks he knows everything about the world and the way it works. He has these illusions of himself being some type of savior." She waved her hand in the air like she was dismissing someone who wasn't there. "All we want for him is to be successful. We want him to make our family proud and carry on his father's legacy around here. Do you know how much pressure is on our family already? To be the wealthiest family around here and be black?" My boss's eyes fell on me, and I wasn't sure how to respond. I didn't know how much pressure there was. I only knew the way people talked about the Kings, as if they were somewhere between a fairy tale and royalty. "My son has a responsibility to carry on our name. Both of my daughters did what they were supposed to do. Hell, even more than they were supposed to do. Inisha graduated top of her class and is now the youngest partner in her firm's history. My youngest daughter's husband is running for Senate. And here's Shia, wasting his time in these countries,
letting the delusion of liberty affect his future. He dropped out of college, for Christ's sake. I didn't know what to say. I didn't feel qualified to give advice or even comment, but I wanted her to keep talking. "What would you want him to do?" I asked. She didn't hesitate. "Go to law school, enjoy this engagement to Bell Gardner, listen to his father." "Shia doesn't want to be a lawyer, though." I wished I could clip my mouth shut. Her eyes hardened a little, but she nodded. "You're right. He doesn't want to, but when he's an adult living in a house like this, he will thank us. Wouldn't you be happy living in a house like this, Meg? Even if you had to make a few sacrifices to get here?" I looked around the butler's pantry, which was nicer than most rooms in my parents' house. "Yes, I would be." When Joe and I talked about the future and our plans for it, I always felt reflexively guilty about wanting to be a mother and a wife. Joe has a different plan for herself, and the idea of being a wife and mother without a career would be hell for her. But for women like me and Mrs. King, there's no shame in it. Is it so bad that I would sacrifice a few things to be a wife and a mother? No, I didn't think it was. To Joe and Meredith, yes, but to me, no.
"I knew you had your head screwed on right. Why couldn't Shia have just done what we said and enrolled in law school? Still not too late. His father has connections. He could get accepted now, even after wasting 2 years peddling around the globe. He just won't listen to us, that impossible child." It was weird to hear Mrs. King talk about Shia like this, like he was making all these mistakes, when sometimes I wished I could be like him. I wished that I didn't care what people thought about me, and I wished I could leave my family to travel the world. I wished I was brave enough to, at least for a little while. "I'm sure he will come around. He's lucky to have parents like you," I reassured her, feeling slightly traitorous. Mrs. King's smile would have made up for my guilt if Shia hadn't walked by the open door just then and given me a look that said he'd heard every word we'd said about him.
12. Joe. Meg had been gone for 20 minutes by the time I got bored and wanted to leave. Well, to be completely honest, I was ready to go the moment we stepped through the wrought iron gate separating the Kings from the rest of the world. It really did feel like some alternate universe, where rich people stand around shoving tiny spoons of caviar into their mouths and wash it down with expensive booze. This was a world I never wanted to end up in. Fortunately, the champagne was helping things. "Isn't this party beautiful?" a tall woman asked me. I had to turn my neck up to see her, and even when I did, I couldn't see much of her face. She was wearing a big feathery hat on her head. She was an elaborate rich peacock. Perhaps just as useless. "It's just delightful." I changed my voice to that of a southern belle, and the woman clapped her hands. Like, actually clapped her hands. "It is. That Bell Gardner is lucky to have the chance to marry into the Kings. Can you imagine?" Her delight and sense of wonder surrounding this family made my stomach turn. To me, the Kings were wasteful, boring, and about as narcissistic as they come. This party showed that, almost as much as the creepy paintings of the five of them strategically placed in every single room I'd been in so far. Maybe it was true that having your portrait painted stole your soul. Or was it having your photograph taken? I couldn't remember, but it would explain what had happened in this household. I didn't know much about them, but with Meg's hatred for Shia and her complaints about the coldness of Mrs. King, I needed to do a little investigating of my own. This lavish party was enough. "I can't imagine. I bet it's, like, so much fun to be stuck in this big old house with nothing to do but drink champagne and complain about your life. Like, so much fun, right?" I moved my hips when I talked, and a smile crept across my face when the woman frowned down at me. "What is your problem?" Her outrage was ridiculous. She acted like I was talking about her own sister or mother. Maybe that was the case, but I didn't know. Nothing. I'm just saying. I heard that if you move into the house, you slowly start to turn into a robot. It's crazy. Belle Gardner. I nodded in the direction of the long table the woman of the evening and her friends sat at. Her groom was the only one missing from the group. The empty seat next to her stuck out like a sore thumb. You are, the woman huffed, and her beady eyes popped out from under her outrageous hat. I didn't want to stick around long enough for her to find the words, so I dipped between a server and a group of tall men. I wanted to go back to the hidden bench, but I didn't want to take the chance of Lori coming in and trying to play his games with me. I pulled out my phone and texted Meg. Going home. Meet me there when you're done. Can't take it anymore. Meg was fine by herself. She stayed out almost every weekend, and didn't come home until hours after I fell asleep. I grabbed another tomato bread and smiled at the gigantic security guards at the front of the gate on my way out. I pulled out my phone to order a ride from Safer, but when I looked around the street, the quiet darkness of it called to me. I could walk for a few minutes and get some fresh Louisiana air into my lungs and some silence into my head. Then call a car to take me the rest of the way home. Well, to the gate of the post. Drivers couldn't get through the security gates without a sticker on their car. Sometimes I got lucky and got a driver with a sticker or a military ID to take me through, but not always. From here, the gate was only a 10-minute drive, and from the gate, it took me about 5 minutes to reach my front door. I could be home before long and put my pajamas on and hang out with my sisters. We had traditions that we followed every year. Beth and Meredith would fill the kitchen with food, and when Aunt Hannah came over, it was even better. Well, the food was. Not the awkward silence that rang hollow through the room between my mom and her sister. Amy always ran around asking everyone what their favorite memories were and told hers first. Meredith and Amy always fell asleep before midnight, and Beth always woke Meredith just before. We would hug and dance at midnight, and Dad would always light sparklers, and we would yell, Prost, when we clicked our glasses together. My dad had learned it in Germany, and we loved saying it. I missed my dad. I was beginning to think about him every hour. When I was younger, it felt easier to distract myself from missing him. I was busy with school and with my writing, and could pass the days faster. But now that I was paying attention to the world around me, it was not so easy. My teachers talked about the war, and my Twitter feed is full of politics, most of which conflict with what I'm learning in school. I felt so much younger just last year. Meredith always told me that being 16 was unlike any other age. When you're 15, you don't drive yet, you're most likely not dating yet. I had started my period later than all of my sisters, aside from Amy. I felt so young until somehow, without my noticing, last year I was thrust into early adulthood. Every day was something new, and I felt the world getting smaller with each sunrise. My sisters think I'm being dramatic, but times are different now, even since Meg was my age 2 years ago. Only a month more and my dad would be home. He would be back and life would lighten up just a little bit. I would have someone to debate with, someone to bounce my ideas off of. I was proud of my dad, but couldn't help wishing he wouldn't have signed up to be an officer. Guilt bloomed in my chest, and I took back my thoughts, mentally apologized to Dad and the universe, and thought again. I was lucky he was coming home, I knew that. But no matter how much I knew that, it didn't make it feel much better when he was gone. I walked past an empty field and thought about the privacy all this space afforded. I bet that the kings owned this land, too, since there were no houses on it, only cattle. Two eyes stared at me from the darkness, and I walked a little farther from the animal. I was fine with cats and birds, but large farm animals were not my thing. Just like on most days in southern Louisiana, the air got sticky at night. It was still cold, but tonight was warmer than the morning. I searched for more cows and tried to stay under the streetlights in case any cars drove past. Meg hadn't texted me back yet, so I hoped that Meredith wouldn't freak out if I came home without her. I didn't think so, but I would see what happened. Maybe Meg would text me back or call me before I called a car. I texted her again. Meg, where are you? I thought I heard a branch snap behind me, but I also knew how my imagination worked. Anytime there was ever too much silence, my mind would create something to keep it occupied. It was why I wrote, to dump out some of my wild imagination. Another snap. Okay, so there is something behind me. A cow? Let it be a cow. I turned around, and Lori was walking about 10 feet back. He raised his arms in the air. Don't shoot! He laughed, and I glared at him. Was he following me? Why are you following me? I shouted. He was only about 5 feet away now. His long strides carried him quickly to my side. His shirt was untucked, and his blonde hair was pulled back away from his face.
I'm not. I just saw you walking and wanted to join you.
He smiled and slid his tongue over his lips. I looked up at his eyes. That sounds a lot like following to me. What do you want? His wet lips were glistening under the streetlight.
I'm heading home, too. Why not go together?
It's a long walk from here, in case you didn't know. He probably didn't know since he'd just moved here, and I sort of loved that I knew more than he did about this. He chuckled and shook his head for a second.
You are just so pleasant, Joe Spring.
I didn't smile. Aren't I? I pointed to the paper cup in his hand. Is that coffee? Where the hell did you find coffee? I'd seen tables and tables of champagne and 2 full bars, but no coffee.
It is coffee. Do you want it?
He held it up. I nodded and grabbed it. It was still hot.
I'd take coffee over compliments right now.
I lifted the white plastic lid from the cup. I sniffed it to make sure it didn't smell like alcohol. The champagne I pretended to like was more than enough for me. After that night, I really didn't understand why people like to drink so much. Adults, maybe they have more to worry about? But teenagers? I don't get their love of alcohol. I snapped the lid back on. Was this safe? I hated that I had to question that. You take a drink, I told him, handing the cup back to him. His eyes went from mine to the cup, and he grabbed it from me. Besides tilting his head to the side, he didn't do anything before he took a drink. He gargled it like mouthwash and smiled after he swallowed it, sticking his tongue out to prove it was all gone.
The walk here is only 10 minutes if we cut through the cemetery, Lori said a few moments later.
The cemetery? We couldn't just cut through the cemetery. It was closed and gated. And a little creepy, honestly.
Yeah.
He kicked a rock with his boot. It slid across the dark street, and all we could hear was the chirping of crickets and the vibration of grasshoppers in the fields around us. Coming up was a cornfield that was always so dark that every time I walked past it, I couldn't help but picture Amy's pick for last Christmas's horror film, Children of the Corn.
It's faster. Trust me. I cut through the cemetery all the time.
It irritated me that he knew this and I didn't. It's also closed.
So? I can help you over the fence if you're worried about it. Most girls can't climb it. I'll help you.
He offered a smile. I loved a challenge, and the way he said, most girls, annoyed me. I'm sure I can handle it. I don't need your help. I smiled back at him and followed him down the road.
It shouldn't be this hot outside. Summer is going to be brutal, Lori said.
I looked over at him.
We're talking about the weather?
He laughed through his response.
Guess not.
The cemetery was marked by a big red wooden gate.
Ready?
Lori asked with a smirk that was a challenge wrapped in a big red bow.
Yep.
I began the climb a second before him, and I didn't need his help over the steel fence. I made it over and down by myself, and only ripped my pants in 2 places. The jeans were a worthy sacrifice to my cause of self-sufficiency. We were silent as we walked among the graves. Lori told me that if we disturbed the dead, they would disturb us, too. I knew he was just talking shit to me, but I still shivered and walked a little closer to him, making sure my steps were as light as possible until we reached a paved road again. We were almost to the gate. I could see it in the distance, only a few minutes' walk ahead. Lori had only just moved here. How did he know more about my town than me?
So, Joe, what are you passionate about?
What a random thing to ask. I laughed, trying to keep up with his long strides.
Not really. I'm curious.
Lori shoved his hands in his pockets and slowed to walk just a little behind me. I want to know yours, Lori. I stretched my back as high as I could. You tell me something about you. I'm not into games.
Joe. Somehow I don't believe that.
He smiled, and the moon shone brighter. 13. I'm not going to let you walk with me if you're going to be obnoxious, I replied. I didn't want to spend the entire walk home playing guessing games and having him make cryptic and not even close to productive comments about everything I said.
I won't be. I promise only my best behavior from here on out.
He lifted his hand and drew a cross over his heart. It was cute. I laughed.
Let's talk, he said, and began firing question after question at me.
By the time we reached the gate of the base, I had talked to him so much that the walk had flown by. Where did I get my name? Why did I like to be called Joe instead of Josephine? Which of my sisters was the oldest? Which was the youngest? I had learned little to nothing about him, besides that I thought I wanted to be his friend. When we approached the gate, I wasn't sure which lane to go through. One of my non-military friends once told me that the gate was like a toll gate. Lori seemed to know which way to go, so I followed him to the far left lane. The lights above us were so bright, and the military police guarding each lane were holding big guns strapped to their uniforms. Meg's friend Coleman was the gate guard, whose job it was to check our identification and welcome us to the great place that was Fort Cypress. He didn't give us a hard time at all before he let us through. He didn't even check our IDs. He probably wanted to sleep with my sister, like the rest of the soldiers we knew.
Tell me why you always scowl, Joe.
When I informed Lori that I did not always scowl, he asked me again, and I glared at him. I wondered if all boys were interesting like him. My dad was, but some of the boys in my school and even older ones that Meg dated seemed less stimulating than plain yogurt.
So, Joe, can I assume you have a temper to go with that glower? Lori asked when we passed the shopette just beyond the gate.
The shopette was always crowded and had the best hot food and tastiest less-than-a-dollar cappuccinos, which came pouring out of the machine within 30 seconds. Whenever we checked out, I would look at the receipt as a big reminder of all the money we'd saved by not paying taxes on our cappuccinos, tornadoes, and Krispy Kreme donuts. My dad would say that we should always use the resources the Army provides for us. During the school year, my dad would fill up his big jug of coffee there every morning. I loved the days when he could drive us to school. It was usually only once a week, but he talked the whole way. For a second, I forgot that I was standing with Lori while my dad was 7,000 miles away. A line of cars pulled out of the parking lot, and we waited on the curb. Lori looked like the type of boy who stayed out late. My dad says I do have a temper. He says that my quick temper, sharp tongue, and restless spirit always get me in trouble. Lori laughed at that.
Your dad seems to know what he's talking about.
Lori sniffled and pulled a tissue from his pocket. He wiped his nose and waved for me to walk in front of him. I stepped down off the curb and made a joke about not falling that time, but I don't think he got it. So, Lori, you've asked me all the questions. My turn. I didn't look back at him, and I made sure to keep my pace a few steps ahead.
What is there to do for fun around here?
Nothing. I'm always trying to figure that out, too. But there's nothing, I told him, distracted from my turn to interrogate him.
You have to make your own adventures, Joe.
When I looked over at him, I felt like he could read my mind. He creates his own adventures, I thought.
Do you want me to come inside?
Lori asked when we reached my driveway. The curtains were open, and I could see Meredith sitting in Dad's armchair and Aunt Hannah sitting on the couch. Amy was on the other end of the couch with her phone in her hand. I didn't see Beth, but I was sure she was in the kitchen. I checked my phone, and it was only 10:45. Meg still hadn't answered me. Sure, my family can be... I looked inside and wondered if my mom and aunt would yell at each other before or after midnight. But you can come on inside. We have a lot of food and stuff. I looked over at old Mr. Lawrence's house, which was pitch black. I gestured to the house. Do you need to tell him or something?
No, Lori laughed. He's in bed. He won't even notice.
Is he as awful as everyone says he is? I blurted out. Lori stopped walking for a moment, and we stood in the middle of my driveway.
Do you want to hear how our morning went today?
I nodded and tucked my long hair behind my ears on both sides.
This morning, the driver took us down to the quarter, to this little place where my grandpa likes to get his pies for the holidays. There was this little fish shop, and while we were waiting, a homeless woman came in begging the owner to let her scrub some fish in exchange for some scraps for her family to eat. She had a little boy with her who looked like he hadn't eaten in days.
My stomach turned.
So, the owner of the fish shop says no, and shooed them out of there. So my grandpa tells the guy off, buys a whole bag of fish, and takes them outside. He handed her a wad of money, the fish, and a bottle of water.
Lori looked down at me.
He even smiled at the toothless little kid. And that man hardly ever smiles. He's tough, but he's a good man. Don't listen to rumors that bored women make up about him.
I was stunned. But I loved the plot twist. I loved the entire idea that people were never who we thought they were. It was silly to think that the first impression, or even the tenth, was enough to know an entire human being. I wasn't buying it. Besides, it made it more fun when old Mr. Lawrence turned out to be a Care Bear, not a grizzly.
Is that your mom?
Lori pointed to the house. I saw Aunt Hannah standing in the window. No, that's my aunt. That one is my mom. I pointed to Meredith sitting on the chair. She had on an old cotton dress and her hair was wrapped up in a floral cloth. Let's go. I tugged on Lori's jacket and he followed me through the creaky door. Amy sat up when we walked in, and I saw her little hands fly up to her hair to fluff the blonde strands. Meredith watched us quietly, but didn't move from the chair.
Hi, everyone.
Lori greeted the awkward room and waved his hand in the air. Lori's going to spend New Year's with us, okay? I told everyone. I didn't wait for anyone to respond before I led him into the kitchen. The lights were on the dimmest setting, so I turned the knob up. Lori squinted a little, but I kept them on high. I pointed to the food. Eat. With a little smirk, Lori grabbed a handful of chips from a bowl. Leaning over the counter to look inside the tops of the crock pots, he lifted the lid on the barbecued sausages and scooped a ladleful onto a styrofoam plate. Those were my favorite before I stopped eating meat.
Let's talk some more, Lori suggested.
I've talked a lot already, and ask Beth, I can talk all day.
I never know when to stop,
I laughed. I felt much calmer when I was back in my house and away from the fancy party at the King's. It didn't surprise me that Meg got caught up in it. I suspected she wouldn't be home before midnight.
Beth is the one who never comes outside, right? The one with the rosy cheeks who always carries a laundry basket?
Lori asked with interest. Then he shoveled a spoonful of little sausages into his mouth. A thin line of dark barbecue sauce dripped down his shirt, and he rubbed it in.
If I had done that, Meg would have scolded me and told me to change my clothes. Boys seem to get away with everything, and it ground on my nerves. Yes, that's her. She's my girl. She's the most decent of us all, I said with loyalty. It was true. Beth was better than all of us, even Meredith. I always hear you guys calling for each other when I'm sitting in the main room over there. His chin motioned to the house next door. And when I look through the window, I always see you guys crowded around each other at the table or on the couch. It's nice. I didn't know what to say. We had eavesdropped on him a few times, so it's not like I could be upset about it. And I wasn't, anyway. I knew so many nosy people. How do we seem from the window, Lori? I asked out of curiosity. You seem like the great American dream I grew up hearing about. My head turned a little to the side, and I dipped a cracker into the cheese ball Beth had made for me. I can assure you that's so far from reality. We're far from the American dream. But I will be close soon. I'm moving the moment I graduate high school and never looking back. I have it all planned. Where do you want to move away to? Won't you miss your sisters? The oven started beeping as he finished asking that, and Beth came shuffling into the room. Her cheeks reddened all the way down to her neck when she saw Lori. Beth, this is Lori. He's spending New Year's with us. Beth was dressed in light blue jeans with two big holes in the knees and an oversized t-shirt from our trip to Disney World last year. She was wearing Meredith's apron with wild indigo strands printed all over it. Her hair was pulled back and barely held with a tie. Hi, she said, then busied herself with the oven. She didn't talk much. Amy came bouncing into the kitchen, and I noticed her newly shiny lips. She hadn't been wearing lip gloss or that dress a few minutes ago. I could only assume it was for Lori's benefit.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for coming to our party, Amy said in a voice that I had never before heard from her.
He was the height of two of her. Her little cheeks were so red. Beth laughed from her place by the oven, and I checked my phone again. I wasn't worried about Meg, but I was annoyed that she would just drop off the earth like that just because she was around a bunch of rich people.
14. I pulled my beanie over my hair. It was 9 in the morning on New Year's Day, and I couldn't sit in the house any longer and listen to Amy complain or Meg talk about Shia and Belle for another minute. I grabbed a broom and put on my strongest boots. I could sweep the driveway or something.
What in the world are you going to do now, Joe? Meg asked.
Going to exercise. I smiled and batted my lashes.
You already took a walk this morning, and it's cold outside. You are crazy for wanting to go out when we have a lit fireplace and Netflix.
Meg looked to Beth for support. Beth didn't seem interested in taking anyone's side. I lifted my broom into the air. I'm not like you, Meg. I can't just lay around all the time. I need more adventure than that. Meg huffed and pressed buttons on the remote. I left her alone and made my way outside. The driveway was actually pretty clean, so I wasn't quite sure what to do with the broom I'd brought outside with me. I looked over to the Lawrence house and counted the windows on its front. 6. The house was made from stately stone, and the yard in the front was better maintained than ours. Fort Cypress would send someone out to cut your grass and maintain your landscaping while your head of household was deployed. The Lawrence house didn't look like an officer's house. It looked like a general's house. It was nice, all matching patio furniture and a black town car parked in the front. It looked lonely, sort of lifeless. No kids were playing outside or teenage girls yelling inside, no shoes on the porch. There were always shoes on the porch at our house. As I stared at the details of the Lawrence house, my imagination started to run wild. I imagined the house as an enchanted palace, full of useless, splendid delights that no one actually enjoyed. I wondered about old Mr. Lawrence's family, and why only his grandson was ever at his house. I knew it could be the simple military family answer, that no one lives in the same state as their family because of PCSing. Lori had already told me that his dad was in Korea.
I looked up to the second-story window, and by the time I realized Lori was standing there, staring right at me, it was too late for me to move. I waved my broom in the air, and the window resisted as he yanked it up.
"How are you?" he asked.
I shrugged. His nose was red, and from down on the ground, his eyes looked puffy.
"How are you?" "A little sick. I'll be fine."
"Are you going to stay locked in there all day?" I didn't know the level of comfort you're supposed to be at with a boy before you initiate hanging out, but I wasn't sure if I cared so much about what I was supposed to do.
"Are you offering your company, Joe?"
He grinned at me from the window. When he smiled, he no longer looked sick.
"No," I grinned back at him. "You should offer me your company," he said, sure of himself.
I think I liked how confident he was. I wasn't sure then if it was genuine, but I wanted him to stay around long enough to find out.
"Come on, Joe Spring," he called from the window above me.
"I'm not sure I would be much fun if you're sick," I yelled up. "I'm not that nice or that quiet." I heard Amy talking inside the kitchen, watching my exchange with Lori.
"I wouldn't want you to be."
I shook my head. I did want to get to know him better, and it was my turn to ask all the questions. But I did need to ask Meredith and make sure she was okay with it. I couldn't imagine that she wouldn't be, but I had never asked to go inside a boy's house before. "I have to ask my mom if I can come in. Now shut your window before you get even worse." I turned from him and carried my broom inside. I went through the back door and found Amy, Beth, and Meredith all standing in the kitchen. After 10 seconds of silence, I finally asked the three of them, "What?"
"Nothing," Meredith said, her lips turning up into a smile. She looked like she was up to something. Her heart-shaped face was staring out the window up at Lori's. I walked over to check what she was looking at, and I saw Lori standing in front of the mirror taking a hairbrush to his hair.
"It's not a big deal," I told them. "You guys shouldn't be so nosy." Amy started making kissing sounds with her little pink lips. Her blonde curls bounced around her face. "He's so hot, though. You're so lucky," she whined, kissing the air one more time.
"Amy," Meredith and I said at the same time.
"What?" Amy's hip jut out, and she looked 16 for a second.
"He is."
Amy grabbed her phone from the counter and asked Beth to make her breakfast. Beth immediately began to move around the kitchen, opening a cabinet and pulling out a loaf of bread.
"So, Meredith, do you mind if I go next door to hang out with Lori?"
She was mid-drink of her coffee, so she swallowed and shook her head.
"No, I don't mind, Joe. Do you feel comfortable going?"
Amy looked up, raising her golden brows.
"Yes, I do."
"Then I trust you to go there. Text me in an hour to check in." Beth shook a jug of orange juice, and if I wasn't in a hurry to get next door, I would have been useless like Amy and gotten her to pour me a glass. When I walked down the hallway, I passed a mirror. I looked like hell. I hadn't even thought about the way I looked when I saw Lori, or that I was wearing black leggings, a Pac-Man sweatshirt, and dirty Vans. I thought I would be sweeping the driveway, not hanging out with Lori inside his house. I didn't feel like changing, though, and he'd already seen me in this outfit anyway. It felt like a lot of work to consider my clothes and get primped just for a boy. I never understood that concept, because what happens when you move in with someone? Do you have to set your alarm for an hour before they wake up just to get ready? No thanks. I went into the bathroom and brushed my teeth, raked Amy's hairbrush through my hair, and tucked my hair behind my ears. My hair always got so oily so fast, and I didn't feel like breathing in the powdery fumes of Meg's dry shampoo, so I shoved my beanie back on my head. Then I leaned into the mirror and studied my face. My lips were their usual puffy selves, and my thick eyebrows were unruly again. Meredith always told me to leave them be until she took me to get them waxed. She even pulled out pictures from 10 years ago when the tiny eyebrow trend was in. I was glad I came after that period in beauty history. I still had sleep in my eyes, so I wet a warm rag and wiped them, plus my mouth.
Before I could find something else to do with my appearance, I shut the light off and walked back to the kitchen.
Here, take him some of the leftovers from last night.
Meredith handed me a covered dish, then gently set a pie on top of it. The pie was from Christmas. It was Meredith's cherry pie recipe that no one except Dad ever ate. Since Aunt Hannah was here now, it seemed like she wanted to make up for missing Christmas by making as many pies as humanly possible.
Okay, okay.
I blocked Meredith from putting another pan, this time meatballs, on top of the stack. On the edge of the kitchen island was a little bowl of the barbecued sausages that Lori seemed to like the night before, so I grabbed them and loaded them on top.
Careful, you'll crush that pie, Meredith warned me.
Beth grabbed the stack from my hands and dumped the sausages into the big dish on the bottom.
I'll get the door, Beth said, moving past Meredith to help me.
Beth's eyes looked a little tired, I thought. I adjusted the pans in my arms and walked through the backyard.
Joe, you're not wearing that, Meg cried from inside the house.
I continued across the yard and didn't look back at my sister. When I got to the door of the Lawrence house, I rang the doorbell twice before someone answered. I was just about to walk away when an elderly man pulled the door open. His hair was white and almost transparent, but was combed neatly and looked like even the wind couldn't move it. I recognized him immediately as old Mr. Lawrence.
Send her up,
Lori's voice carried down the stairs, and old Mr. Lawrence waved me in. His eyes were suspicious, and the oddest shade of river green I had ever seen. Lori's eyes were so dark, it surprised me that he looked so different from his grandpa. Old Mr. Lawrence had a sharply squared jaw, and his thick shoulders reminded me of someone on TV, but I couldn't think of who. Thanking the old man, I walked toward the staircase and saw Lori making his way down. My arms were killing me. The interior of the house was so strange. The curtains were maroon and massive, draping over the hunter green wallpaper. There were so many curtains it was distracting. The random candlesticks and books everywhere reminded me of the set of Downton Abbey or something. It was messier than I had imagined, especially compared to the view from the windows I usually snooped through.
Do you need help? What is all that?
Lori's long legs carried him down the staircase quickly, and he reached for the food in my arms. He led me back up to his bedroom and set the food on a desk near the door. His room seemed bland at first glance, but as I looked closer, I saw touches of magic everywhere. From a distance, his wallpaper looked like black squiggles on a white sheet, but when I walked over to it, I realized it was sheet music. Against the wall farthest from the doorway was his bed. The sheets and pillowcases were all white and burlap and reminded me of an IKEA ad. The Louisiana sun was beaming through his big open windows. It was warmer in the room than outside, and the ceiling fan made a nice breeze. As Lori pulled the Tupperware lid off the sausages, I explored his bedroom. He didn't seem to mind, because he sat down on the edge of the desk and started eating while I flipped through the pages of an old coffee table book with Barcelona on the front cover. The pages were filled with bright, vivid pictures of beautiful beaches and tapas-style food.
Have you been to Barcelona?
His mouth was full of food. He nodded.
Was it wonderful?
He nodded again.
I couldn't imagine how it would be to be so young and have traveled so much.
Being an army brat, I have moved with my family a few times, from Connecticut to Texas, and now outside of New Orleans. But that was nothing compared to traveling Europe and having an Italian artist for a mother. I loved Meredith so much, but I didn't get my love for writing from her. I put the Barcelona book down and grabbed a notebook full of scribbles.
Not that.
Lori grabbed it from my hand before I could flip to any of the pages. It made me want to see it even more.
What is that?
It's a book of drawings, but I'm not good at it.
I let him hide it away from me. One day, when we were friends, I would ask again if he would show me. I moved to another part of his room near his bed. He had stacks of graphic novels in languages that I didn't even recognize. Next to that were empty bottles of Coke and two glasses of what I assumed was water. On the nightstand, his wallet lay on top of a GQ magazine and was stuffed with cards and receipts. I picked it up in my hands and started looking through the cards. Honestly, who hoarded so many cards? There was an Urban Outfitters gift card, a punch card for Panera Bread, a business card with a realtor's name on it. Before I could see any more of them, Lori said my name and then, what are you doing going through my wallet? I felt myself getting a little anxious. Just looking, I shrugged and turned around to him. He was holding the pie plate in his hands, but he didn't seem upset. He half smiled at me.
Is that something people around here do? Pick up someone's wallet and go through it?
Humor was in his voice. Imagine if I picked up your purse and opened your wallet. He sat down on the small sofa in his bedroom. I don't have a purse. I guess it could be considered invasive to go through someone's things like I just did. The wallet felt heavier in my hands, and I dropped it back onto the nightstand. I have three sisters. I couldn't help but laugh at myself. We don't have any privacy. Sorry. I took a few steps away from the nightstand and tried to find something else to look at.
Did you know that the Russian language doesn't have an original word for privacy? Lori asked.
His couch was big enough for both of us to sit on, so I sat on the opposite end from him. An orange pillow with a fox's face on it was between us. I put it on my lap and touched the soft fur. For a second, I thought his comment was a random thing to know. But then I remembered that I knew that too. I did know that, actually, I said rather proudly.
Lori's chin turned to me. Did you? How?
I didn't think he believed me, and I found that funny.
I read it in a book once. What book?
The Bronze Horseman. Lori shot up from the couch.
I know it. It was my mother's favorite book. Well, books. I read the trilogy last summer.
No way. Lori was definitely the most interesting boy I had ever met.
Yes, way. The Italian version cut some of the text. Can you believe it?
I liked how he got excited easily. I did that too, but Meg always told me it was immature.
If Lori was immature, then so was I.
What? Why would they?
Not sure, but they did.
What were we talking about before? My head was fuzzy when I tried to remember what was happening before I was on the couch with Lori.
Who cares? Let's talk about your aunt and your mom. Are they sisters?
I told him about us girls' theories about Aunt Hannah and Meredith and the drama between them. I told him more than I should have, but I felt like that was okay. For a second, I thought about Meg and how River had tortured her when they broke up. I had to remember that guys can be important to me, but I'm more important. I want a career, and I want to be taken seriously. I couldn't imagine being someone's wife and liking it. I didn't think anyone was out there that I would like enough to share the remote with. His phone rang twice while I was talking, and when I stopped for a moment, he said,
It's my mom, with the kind of shy smile that boys in magazines wear.
I wondered if he knew that he looked like a troubled musician or a struggling actor. He had the polish of a well-groomed politician's son, but the wit of a bartender's son. I stared at his mouth, and the slow way it moved when he explained things in detail, with memories from Rome and Boston, and how he somehow loved the two equally. I wondered what the girls that he usually dated looked like. Not that pretty girls couldn't be smart, because I knew they could be. I knew many. The thing was, though, that pretty girls are sometimes taught that it's their job to be pretty and not to be smart. I wondered if boys were taught the same. Once, Meg told me that girls who were prettier had easier lives. I didn't believe her then, and I didn't think I could ever agree with that. I wondered if the pretty girls Lori could date were ever interesting. It wasn't fair to assume they weren't, but since I didn't have much social experience, I only had the basic stereotypes to base my ideas on. After a few minutes, Lori changed the subject.
What about high school?
I groaned. I hate it. I can't wait to be a journalist, or a businesswoman, or a writer, or all three. Lori's expression changed, and I thought he wanted to say something, but he kept tapping his lips with his fingers and pulling at the corners of them. I used to do that when I was younger, and I constantly had the worst red rash around my mouth. Meg called it my ring around the rosy, and Amy told me it was a disease. There were two types of people, I supposed. Well, three, including Sweet Beth, who helped rub cream on my lips before bed. I started telling him about high school and how I felt about my teachers, mostly Mr. Geckle, and how he kicked me off the newspaper and demoted me to yearbook. Lori laughed a lot and looked pissed a lot, especially about Mr. Geckle and his red cheeks and hairy fingers.
"You have such a funny way of explaining things and telling stories. It's so, so true, but told in a way I wouldn't have thought of," Lori said. "When I was younger, my dad had this girlfriend who talked like you. She lived in New England somewhere, and she was like a gypsy or something."
I laughed like it was a silly thing to say, but I loved the comparison.
"Do you want a tour of the house?" Lori asked me the third time his phone rang.
But by the time we reached the big staircase, Meredith had texted me and told me that my dad would be calling in 20 minutes. I told Lori I had to go, and he showed me to the door. Old Mr. Lawrence was watching me and opened his mouth like he wanted to say something before I left, but he turned away and disappeared behind another door.
15. Meg. "Joe? Joe? Where are you?" I cried, standing at the bottom of our staircase. I heard a small, "Here," from upstairs. It sounded like it was coming from our bedroom, and sure enough, when I got there, I found Joe reading The Bell Jar and covered shoulder to toes in our dad's plaid blanket that usually rests on the back of his armchair. This was Joe's utopia, a bowl of Bugles on her lap and her fingers gripping the binding of a novel. It gave her some sort of refuge, we all knew that. Meredith reminded us of our strengths and our weaknesses. Joe was smart. Education would come easy to her. And me? Well, I was beautiful and charming. I may not be as book smart, but I'm street smart, and sometimes that gets you further in life. We would see. Joe would be fine, and Amy would be too. Beth was the only one I worried about. "What can I help you with?" Joe's eyes regretfully pulled away from her book. She held the edges tightly in her hand, careful not to lose her place. "Look." I held up the screen of my phone, showing the Facebook invite with Belle Gardner's smug face on it. Ugh, why would she even invite me? Just to rub it in my face that she's part of that family now? Miss Gardner, soon to be Mrs. King, invited us to the King family's New Year's Day dinner. Isn't that nice? I stomped in a line. I was trying to be calm, but I didn't have much patience at that moment. Joe sighed and closed her book. Her eyes were full of maturity and wisdom when she spoke. She was changing and evolving every day, it felt like. "Do you really want to go, Meg? Or is this some weird social sabotage that we shouldn't get ourselves involved in? It feels like a setup to me. I've read stories that started like this," Joe finished, full of skepticism and fire. "Joe," I sighed. "She just didn't get it. I didn't want to go, per se, but I sort of had to. I had to pretend that I wasn't bothered by Belle Gardner's new fiancé, new thoroughbred family that I longed for dramatically. I didn't care about her advancement into a part of society that a woman who works at a bar has no business being in. I could work my way up to that same level. I just needed time. Belle Gardner was older than me and had a head start anyway. When John got back, I would make up for it. I would be with a man who adored me, and that was all I ever wanted in life. Well, that and beautiful, sweet, happy children, a nice house, and a good marriage. I knew that Joe didn't share the same values, but I hoped she would have my back on this. Yes, I want to go. What are we going to wear?" I asked her, changing the direction of the conversation. I only had 2 hours to get ready. It was obvious that whatever reason Belle had for inviting me in the first place came as a late thought, which annoyed me more than the randomness of the invite did. Joe pulled the blue and gray plaid blanket away from her body and looked down. "What I'm wearing is fine,"
She revealed a gray t-shirt and dark blue jeans with rips up the legs.
You have to wear a dress, Joe. You have to. Look at this invitation. There's going to be matching silverware and people serving us dinner. You can't wear jeans.
I usually loved Joe's chill Los Angeles style, but not for something like this. Mrs. King would be offended as hell if I brought my sister to her annual New Year's Day dinner wearing jeans.
I don't own a dress.
Joe shrugged like it wasn't a big deal at all. And fair enough, to her, it wasn't. But for me, this was monumental. There had to be a reason that Belle Gardner was inviting me. The invite hadn't come from Mrs. King, as I would have hoped. I didn't expect to be invited at all, but it would have been a totally different story if Mrs. King herself had invited me, especially since we had had some QT last night. So I had to be on my best behavior with Mrs. King, and Joe's wearing jeans wouldn't cut it. Josephine, you have to wear a dress, or I can't go. I tried not to let my voice crack. I hated that I was so worked up over this. I couldn't help it. When I thought of Belle Gardner dazzling in that green dress the other night, it made me panic and imagine how dressed up everyone would be in such a formal setting. I couldn't stand to be the one person who looked like they didn't belong. Joe, please, can't you wear one of Beth's or mine? Just find something to wear, but it has to be a dress. I was anxious. Joe sat up and set her book on the desk at the end of her bed. Then I won't go. I don't like these snotty, negative energy social hurdles. They're pointless, and I don't care who likes me and who doesn't. She was being ridiculous. I didn't know how two sisters could be so different. It didn't seem possible that this long-haired, long-legged firecracker was my blood. She couldn't care less about her reputation or what boys or girls in her grade thought of her. Honestly, I cared more what the women thought. They were the ones judging. Sometimes I thought I wanted to be more like Joe, but when I imagined the lonely realities, I quickly broke with the ludicrous idea. Come on, Joe. She closed her eyes and held them shut, the way she always did, and I let my mind wander for a moment. I thought about Shia, what he would wear, how he would act around Mr. King after their fight yesterday. My stomach felt like I'd drank rotten milk. I hoped this feeling would let up before the dinner. When I would worry like this, my dad had a way of talking me down. My dad, Shia, Joe. They were all so different, yet somehow tied to me and my life. You can wear something of mine, Joe. Anything you want. I was being so helpful. The moment she nodded her reluctant assent, I ran off to shower and shave and pluck and plump. 2 hours later, we were standing by our front door, Joe wearing a denim dress of mine. One of the straps was hanging a little off her shoulder, and her long hair was toppled over to one side, the part in the middle non-existent and messy. It fit her so well. Joe had that type of face and thick hair that could pull off the messy look. When I tried that, I looked more bedhead than beach waves. She looked like she was in California, not Louisiana, but she looked completely striking. She always did. Women in Sephora would pay $40 a pop for the natural blush on her cheeks. We're doing this, I said to her, and she nodded her defiant head at me, and I somehow knew she would be down for anything I asked her to do. It made me love her more, and I felt our bond grow. It had been happening a lot lately. Joe was finally at that age where we could relate again. At a few ages, it always fades a little, like 12 and 14 through 16. But now she was almost 17, and I finally felt like she was cool to hang out with again. We're doing this. She smiled back at me. I always loved her, but sisterly love is different from friend, complete comfort love. There were things I'd told my friends in Texas that I would be absolutely humiliated about if Joe or sweet Beth knew. Lately, Joe had been blurring the line between sister and friend. It made me feel good having another person to trust, Of course, I trusted my mom and all of my sisters, but trust and ease don't always go hand in hand. It was hard to find those people, and I tended to trust the wrong people again and again.